It is Friday, December the 21st. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here. Coming up, another Trump administration chief to step down, and the war and what's going on about U.S. troops leaving Syria.
Came as a bit of surprise because previously President Trump had been advised by senior people in his cabinet to maintain American forces in Syria.
Tensions between Canada and China and what the prime minister is doing about it all.
I think what he's thinking is that by being more aggressive, for example, by calling the Chinese president, this might simply lead to poor conditions for the Canadians being detained.
Also ahead, the plight of African migrants. Meantime, we have the lead story. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis is the latest member of the Trump administration to announce that he is stepping down. Here's AP Sagar Magani.
President Trump tweets his Pentagon chief of nearly 2 years will leave in February. The two have clashed over the president's go-it-alone stance on world affairs, including yesterday's announcement of a Syria troop pullout. Mattis made reference to their differences in his resignation letter, writing it's right for him to step down because, quote, you have the right to have a Secretary of Defense whose views are better aligned with yours on these and other subjects. The retired four-star Marine general was perhaps the administration's most respected foreign policy official. The president says he'll soon name a replacement. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And on the matter of President Trump deciding to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria, VOA's Lori London asked Australian National University scholar Amin Saikal what he thinks.
Well, it came as a bit of a surprise because previously President Trump had been advised by senior people in his cabinet to maintain American forces in Syria in order to provide support for the Kurdish allies of the United States, and particularly YPG, which had played a very important role in combating the so-called Islamic State in Syria. But, I mean, obviously, no, it looks like the president has come to the conclusion that perhaps the Russians, the Iranians, and Hezbollah, in support of the Assad regime, have prevailed in Syria, and there is not much more that the United States can do. But, of course, that's a very rational explanation. At the same time, the White House has announced that the United States is going to move into the next phase, but they haven't really explained what that next phase is going to be.
How destabilizing is a decision like this to do this? He's getting a lot of backlash from a lot of people, including a lot of national security experts that are very concerned about this.
Well, it can be very destabilizing in the sense that now this action opens the way for Turkey to expand its zone of security in northern Syria against the Syrian Kurds, whom Ankara has basically denounced as terrorists. And at the same time, it provides a complete free hand for the Assad regime, as well as its international supporters, to maintain their momentum against all forms of opposition. But at the same time, President Trump has said that the mission is sort of accomplished in the sense that the so-called Islamic State has been defeated. Well, territorially, yes, that may be true, but in terms of its ideological stance and operational capacity, the IS still is a force to be reckoned with, and there are conflicting reports about the size of the IS fighters present in Syria and Iraq at the moment. Some have estimated, the estimates ranges from 14,000 to 30,000. If that's really the case, it means that the IS still remains a very potent force. But I think, to me, it appears that President Trump has come to the point to conclude that the Russians and the Iranians and Hezbollah and the Assad regime will take care of that.
Well, certainly Russian President Vladimir Putin praised the president's decision, so clearly he's making Russia happy with this decision. How concerned should Israel be? And second of all, what about just in general others that we may say we would protect, like the Kurds, and then go back on our word?
Well, Israelis have reason to be concerned, but at the same time, Prime Minister Netanyahu announced yesterday that he has received full assurances from the Trump administration and that the United States will stand behind Israel and will make sure that Israel's security is the high priority, and the United States will act by other means to ensure that priority. So we really don't know what has really transpired between the Trump administration and the Israeli government, but it looks like Benjamin Netanyahu has not appeared to be as concerned as one would have really expected it. But of course, there is also a cynical view, and the cynical view is that perhaps President Trump may be contemplating the possibility of a military assault on Iran, which he has warned in the past, and doesn't really want the American forces or 2,000 troops to be in Syria during this attack, which could become the target of the Iranian forces on the ground there. And I think this would be a very dramatic action on the part of the United States, but at the same time, it will provide a foreign policy diversion for President Trump, who is domestically very much besieged and is going to and is likely to face more problems once the Democrats takes over the House of Representatives. But as I pointed out, this is a more cynical view, and a cynical mind would really think along those lines.
Amin Saikal is the director of the Center for Arab and Islamic Studies, also a professor of political science at Australian National University. He was speaking with VOA's Laurie London. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you picture Saturn, you probably think of a planet surrounded by a spectacular system of rings. Now picture Saturn without those iconic rings. That's what could happen between 100 and 300 million years from now, according to recent research conducted by scientists at the UK's University of Leicester and NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. In the 1980s, after examining images from NASA's Voyager mission, scientists noticed three dark bands on Saturn. This led them to theorize that Saturn was shedding ring material in the form of water that rained on the planet. The new research team thinks that this ring rain, which they say is made up of dusty ice particles, is being pulled into Saturn along its magnetic field lines by the planet's gravity at a faster rate than had been thought. They theorize that this could cause Saturn's rings to completely disappear in 100 to 300 million years. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has urged caution in the wake of the detention of a third Canadian by China since the arrest in Vancouver on December 1st of the chief financial officer of the giant Chinese telecom Huawei. Meng Wanzhou is being sought by the United States for alleged sanctions violations and is requesting her extradition. She was released on bail in Canada and has another court hearing scheduled February the 6th. Mr. Trudeau said his priority is the safety and security of Canadians abroad.
Politicizing or amplifying the level of public discourse on this may be satisfying in the short term, but would not contribute to the outcome we all want, which is for Canadians to be safe and secure.
Mr. Trudeau is under pressure to speak with China's President Xi Jinping about the detention of Canadians. Nelson Wiseman is a political science professor at the University of Toronto. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty, while Prime Minister Trudeau is trying to be cautious, it may not be well received in Canada.
I think what he's thinking is that by being more aggressive, for example, by calling the Chinese president, this might simply lead to poor conditions for the Canadians being detained and for Canadian businesses in China being penalized in some way. So the approach of the government appears to be, well, we'll go through normal consular channels. We'll deal with the Chinese ambassador in Canada. We'll have our ambassador in Beijing dealing with his counterparts over in China and try to get access. Now, this third Canadian, the government isn't clear and doesn't seem to know whether it's connected to the detention of Ms. Meng, the Huawei executive. You know, there are thousands of Canadians, as there are Americans, in China at any time, and it could be a visa issue or some other issue that has led to this detention. Although many people suspect this is sort of the next domino, and that we might get more Canadians detained.
Are you saying it's time for Canada to play hardball like China apparently is?
Well, the problem is Canada doesn't have many hardballs. At best, it plays softball. We have to think our way forward through this. One possibility is this. There is going to be another hearing in this British Columbia court in early February, and that would give an opening to Ms. Meng's lawyer to argue that in light of the American president's comments, which suggest that politics is involved in this detention and it is not strictly a rule of law issue, he might decide that she should be released. I think that's one potential opening, but that's still more than a month away. I think if there's further escalation, if it becomes clear that 4, 5, 6 Canadians are held, yes, I would expect the Canadian government to get more aggressive about it.
The president of Canada's Automotive Parts Manufacturers Association is quoted as saying that he's spoken with a few Chinese automakers who are now delaying a decision to set up production facilities in Canada, so there could be further fallout from this Meng case.
Oh, yes. I mean, we've had some already. Canada Goose, which is a very successful and popular manufacturer of winter coats, was going to open a store in Beijing a few days ago and postponed the opening. And there have been demonstrations in China. There's been a lot of threats on social media. And, you know, there are police now standing on guard outside of the Canadian embassy in Beijing. So there's been a lot of anti-Canadian feeling whipped up in China. And this is being expressed on social media and expressed by some people who are well connected to the government. Nothing happens in China without the government being directly involved. And if it's not involved, it squelches what's going on.
Why isn't China's ire directed at Washington and not Ottawa?
Because it's easy to direct your ire at Canada. It should be directed at the U.S., but the Chinese-American relationship, the trade relationship, and more broadly strategically, is so important that they're afraid of whipping up the ire of the American president. And for them, the most vital thing is getting to some sort of trade agreement with the United States, because right now their economy is actually on a downward slope.
As Nelson Wiseman, political science professor at the University of Toronto, he was speaking with my colleague, Victor Beattie. African migrants coming to Europe dream of landing a job there, but the reality is usually much harder, working on the streets, collecting garbage, or picking up fruit and vegetables out in the fields. The migrants are not legally allowed to work while they wait for asylum claims to be processed, which can take months or even years and often forces them into the black market. Henry Ridgewell reports the city of Barcelona is becoming a hub for migrants in Spain, where the number of new arrivals has risen sharply this year to more than 55,000.
On the sidewalks of Barcelona, they are a common sight, mainly African migrants heaving shopping carts full of scrap metal, scoured from building sites and backyards, often weighing hundreds of kilograms. It is back-breaking and badly paid work, but a means of survival. A cartload can be sold to recycling firms for around $35, or $50 if they are lucky. Supporters say they are doing a valuable job. Critics argue they are part of a black market increasingly run by criminal gangs who exploit the migrants. So authorities are stepping in to clean up the business. Alencop is a city-run cooperative that offers some protection for the collectors. They offer Barcelona residents timetabled collections and special appointments, collection by van or bike, job security and a guaranteed price for the migrants. Among them is Eric Cutter, who arrived in Spain last year from Ghana.
Alencop has done many things for me, because I entered Alencop without papel, without anything, but now I have my documents.
Cutter was unprepared for how tough life would be.
What is different is I know knew that if I enter here, things will be difficult as I get in here. Because I think Europe is very rich as I hear before. And then, but when I enter here, no, things are not as I was thinking.
Other migrants in the city have carved out their own commercial niche, selling mainly counterfeit goods on the streets. They are known as manteros because they sell their goods on blankets or mantas. If the police come, everything is wrapped in the blanket for a quick getaway. Local store owners say they are losing business. Fermín Vilar is from the campaign group Top Manta, created by Barcelona shopkeepers.
En estos momentos hay personas que se han acostumbrado tanto al volumen de negocio.
Vilar says there are those who have become so accustomed to the profits from selling illegal goods that it does not compensate them to enter the legalized and regulated world. He adds, a host country must manage immigration quickly or society will reject it. And that is a danger because nobody wins. The sharp rise in the number of migrants arriving in Spain is ramping up pressure on the government to stem the flow of new arrivals and to better integrate the migrants already here. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Barcelona, Spain.
Italian paleontologists say the largest and oldest meat-eating dinosaur ever to have been found is from the northern area of Lombardy. The Italians recently published their study on the fossils discovered years ago in a large marble quarry in the Italian Alps. That story now from Sabina Castelfranco in Rome.
The Italian team of paleontologists say the new specimen that lived some 200 million years ago is the first known dinosaur skeleton from the Jurassic Age found in Italy. They have named it Saltrio Venator Zanellae, which means Zanella's Saltrio Hunter, in honor of Angelo Zanella, the fossil amateur, who accidentally first unearthed the bones, and for the area where the bones were found. Zanella has said he will never forget that day. The bones appeared in large blocks of rock in a marble quarry near Saltrio in the summer of 1996 in the Italian Alps. Zanella reported his find to the Natural History Museum in Milan, which further scouted the area and found more fossils. Many of the bones bore the feeding marks of ancient marine invertebrates. Cristiano Dal Sasso of the Natural History Museum led the research, which was published in the scientific journal PJ. He said this dinosaur fossil is the first found in Lombardy and the oldest and largest dinosaur of the Lower Jurassic in the world. Dal Sasso said 132 bone pieces were recovered and it was not easy to extract the bones from the hard rock. They worked systematically, fragment by fragment, to recompose and position the bones. He said the discoveries were very exciting. In their study, the paleontologists outlined the characteristics of the dinosaur. The huge carnivore, they said, had an estimated body length of 7.5 meters, an 80-centimeter skull, and weighed at least a ton. It had very sharp teeth, and his lower limbs had four fingers, three of which had powerful claws. Dal Sasso and his team said the dinosaur was a real war machine. He said this dinosaur was one of the predators at the top of the food chain, and therefore there must have been also large herbivore dinosaurs that were his prey. Saltrio Venator Zanellae is the second dinosaur to have been found in Italy. The first was the tiny fossil dinosaur Scipionyx that was unearthed in southern Italy in 1980. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
And still ahead on International Edition, the sounds of the Delphonics. This is VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, general elections are coming up in the Democratic Republic of Congo on December 23rd to determine a successor to President Joseph Kabila. An in-depth discussion on what's at stake in DRC's elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Time now for a little something from the world of music.
Wasn't true, and you passed them by. Though you're in the silly ring, and their lines don't mean a thing, why don't you let me try?
The Delphonics are an American R&B soul vocal group from Philadelphia. They were most popular in the late 1960s and in the early 70s.
I'm sure you will see.
You will see.
La La Means I Love You was one of the Delphonics' biggest hits that made the charts in 1968, and you can still hear it today all over the radio. Their hit songs were primarily written, composed, and produced by lead vocalist and founding member William Poogie Hart, and the musical instrumentation was arranged and conducted by songwriter and producer Tom Bell. Ready or Not, Here I Come was one of those super hits for the Delphonics. Delphonics were originally known as the Four Gents when they were formed in 1965. Poogie Hart, who was born in Washington, D.C. in 1945, Wilbert Hart, born in Philadelphia in 1947, and Randy Kane, also from Philadelphia, where he was born in 1945, were the founding members. Their songs have been used in many film soundtracks, including Jackie Brown, which included one of their super hits, Didn't I?
My heart and soul.
founding member Randy Kane died in 2009. And still today, Poogie Hart and the Delphonics and Wilbert Hart, formerly of the Delphonics and Greg Hill's Delphonics, are all out actively touring in the United States and abroad, singing all those hits that made the Delphonics chart toppers.
True, girl. Now, didn't I think it, baby? Didn't I think it, baby? But this time I'm really leaving you, girl. Oh, hope you know it, baby. Hope you know it, baby. 10 times more, yes, I walk out the door. Get this thing through your head, there'll be no more.
You really should check the Delphonics out online. I guarantee you they're coming to your area very soon. These guys tour year-round. Listen, many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. World News straight ahead. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington hoping you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from the Delphonics.
Breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Earth and sky.
Here's a question from a listener about our own Milky Way galaxy.
I know our solar system is placed about two-thirds out from the center of the Milky Way, but where is the Milky Way in the universe?
In this century, astronomers have thoroughly mapped the stars in this part of the Milky Way galaxy. That's how we know our sun's location with respect to the galaxy's center. Likewise, astronomers have plotted the Milky Way's position with respect to the nearest galaxies. But the universe as a whole is a far bigger place than just our local group of galaxies.
Also, the universe is constantly expanding. The galaxies are moving away from each other. So we see the galaxies where they were, not where they are. Trying to determine the Milky Way's location would be like trying to find your way across a terrain where the landmarks aren't really where they appear to be.
So it's difficult, or maybe not even possible, to talk about where the Milky Way is with respect to the rest of the universe. Astronomers generally avoid the problem of describing where the Milky Way is by saying when it is, and when is thought to be 12 to 15 billion years after the Big Bang, believed to be the only moment in the history of the universe when all matter existed at the same place. And for today, that's our program. I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is VOA News.